So, Mike, today is October 11th, 2018. This is the second in our series of podcasts. Today we're actually out of the country. We're down at the Chicago Booth School of Business, which is the business school that is very famous for finance and is considered the most famous school in all of the world for finance.
Right now got ranked second, or sorry, first actually with Harvard.
Did it really?
Yep.
That's impressive. What was interesting today for me was hearing that there's been 89 Nobel laureates that have won a Nobel Prize in the field of economics, and 32 of them were at this school.
Incredible, isn't it, for one school to have that much production of just geniuses in the finance world?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I would have thought that Harvard would have been number one, because you always think of Harvard being at the top of everything in terms of academic achievement and so on. This school is obviously number one when it comes to economics and finance.
Yeah, I think Harvard has such a name to it that people recognize it, but when it gets down to the real people behind it, they realize the Booth School of Business, or Chicago Booth School of Business, is the top in the world.
The thing I found today, we were lucky we got to start the day hearing from Eugene Fama, one of the Nobel laureates. And I think what's interesting, a couple things. He's 79 years old, and yet he's still sharp as can be. He's still teaching. He's still involved. What I love about him is he said two things today that were neat. One, he said that someone asked him a question, and he said, "Well, I won't answer that because I don't know enough about it." And I thought that was a great answer. So many times we try and answer stuff we don't know anything about. But he was just honest. He said, "I don't know anything about that subject."
It's always great to hear. He's just so enjoyable to listen to. He has such a keen sense of finance, and he just understands everything from the root. And it's funny, you hear different economists talk, and they don't seem to have the in-depth understanding, or they want to say an opinion. He, what you said is correct. He really doesn't have to state an opinion on anything. He's very factual. And it's not a matter of his opinion what things are, it's what the facts say on everything. And his opinion is unimportant to him, almost.
He talked a bit about market efficiency. And is the stock market efficient? And he said, "Well, I have a model for it that shows that it's efficient." And he said he's always got these detractors who say, "Well, it isn't efficient." And he says, "Well, show me your model." And none of them have a model.
No.
I think the other thing that struck me is he's always so calm. So, you know, today we're going through a bit of a market correction in the global markets. It's sort of interesting that it's almost 10 years ago that we were going through the same correction. For Eugene, he just looks at the data. He doesn't look at the markets, the events, or anything like that. He just looks at the data and says, "This is just normal. This is what happens."
As he refers to as a noise. When you look at the big picture, this is noise along the way that's going to happen. It was interesting because the presentation was talking about premiums, and we get frustrated sometimes with how long it takes to see these premiums. And he gives all the numbers, and you know they exist. And as you invest for a longer period of time, your chances of seeing these premiums increase. And I think, for an example, if you look at a stock premium, it's there on a one-year basis was 39% of the time?
39% of the time.
39% of the time you don't get the premium. So basically 61% of the time you do get the premium for investing in the stock market. And they were talking about the negativity when it doesn't work. And again, on a 1 year level, 39% of the time it doesn't work. When you start to go out to 5 years, it dropped down to mid-20s, somewhere out there. And by the time you get to 10 years, it starts to drop to the teens on when it doesn't work. And when you start looking 20 and 30 year time horizons, it drops down to maybe a 5% chance of it not working. Interesting part about that is a lot of our clients' time horizons are 30 years. And some people ask why we invest in these premiums, but people are looking at this money over their entire retirement, which is many times a 30-year time horizon.
So what you're saying is you could actually have a 30-year period where stocks don't outperform T-bills, which is what the premium is, and that could be the time period that individual client is a client of yours.
Yeah, you know, if you look at it, think of the stock market correction 2008, 2009, when we saw the stock correction in there. If you went back 30 years from that, there was really high interest rates in the 80s too, right? So when you look at the market premium, there might have been a point in time where for the last 30 years, it may have made more sense to be in T-bills than be in the stock market. It's a very limited time it lasted, but there could be a place in time where it may have made, you know, the premium didn't show up. But very unusual, and when you invest in a long time, do you want to invest in the 95 percentile or the 5 percentile, you know?
It's interesting. The 5% always initially scares me when I hear it, because I go, wow, that's a really long time. But I always flip it around and go, well, that means 95% of the time it does work, so why would I take the other strategy, which fails 95% of the time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the other strategy is just to be in T-bills.
Yeah.
And be safe all the time.
Absolutely. It's what do you think about what's going on right now? Let's call it the noise, what do you think about it?
I guess there's a bunch of things. And what does it matter? It the market started to react. It's going to go down until it doesn't go down. I think there's a few things at play. Obviously, the interest rates have been rising. The U.S. just sort of did a double where they increased it 50 basis points or half a percent as opposed to a quarter percent at a time. So I think that had an impact. There's still the concerns about trade wars with the U.S. and China now that the Canadian-Mexico-U.S. thing has been sorted out a little. I think those are two things. The expectation is if interest rates go up too much, then corporate profits might fall a bit. And we've had a really good run. We're due for a correction. And I know that's a terrible thing to say, but it's like if you have a run of hot weather, you're going to get some cold days.
It's funny, you know, as I read into it, some of the stuff actually makes me feel good. Not that I like a correction happen, but it was something we know. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it's going to happen. And there's a lot of backstabbing going on in the U.S. government where Trump is complaining about the Fed and about what they're doing. But to be honest, I like to see that not everything is being totally dictated by Trump, that someone's doing something that's not with him. It means the Federal Reserve is actually really trying to keep the economy in check, and they're not bowing to whatever Trump says at times. So I see some type of positive in what's going on there.
Well, I think that's interesting because, I mean, a lot of people don't know that he can't control what the Fed does.
No.
And he seems to be able to control a lot of other things in the U.S., but he can't seem to control what the Fed does. So I think...
It's probably not a great time for him. They're going to the midterm election, so he's probably not thrilled with what's going on right now.
Exactly. He's like, you know, unemployment's low and the economy's moving, and we're the only economy that's really moving in the whole world, and everything's in our favor. I don't know. Who knows? What else did you take away from today's conference?
They started off today with giving a history of the Booth School, and even beyond Dimensional, they started off with the history of the school. So that was really interesting to get a feel for what's went on. They talked about the market volatility. Next thing, they started talking about client experiences. And it was good for us because a lot of this stuff they said people should be doing, I think we're doing right in the business. There's some stuff we can still improve, there always is, but it seemed like we're heading in the right direction a lot of things. You find that?
I do. I think it's interesting that we've been working at it. We've been trying to improve our client experience. I think there's more we can do. I think we need to look at the whole journey that an individual takes from when they first hear about us to you know, when they come in for their first meeting, and then when they become a client, and what's the process like after. I think we spent a lot of time working on improving our client meetings. I think there's more we can do. I think we need to continue to improve the technology that we're using with clients. The technology is exploding, and things are going to become easier to do. And I think we need to be on the edge of that. I enjoy that. I think our team is embracing it. And our clients are starting to notice some of the changes. Does that mean we're going to have a computer answering the phone?
No, absolutely not. It was interesting because there was two pieces to what they talked about. And one along the line of what you're speaking of is the companies that are advancing and growing the most quickly are definitely embracing technology. Absolutely. The other piece was talking about some of the great companies that exist. They talked about the Ritz. They talked about Disney and companies like that. And it's really about the client experience and how they can provide unique client experience that are very personalized. And I think there's a fine line between technology and the personalized client experience. And if you use technology in the right way, you can enhance that experience. But it's tough to do. It's very easy to go and you can't outsource everything technology. You have to use it to improve what you're doing.
Well, I think it's interesting. We've just sort of, you know, we adopted this thing sort of a month ago in the office where we're asking clients how they want, you know, do they want a hard copy or like a paper copy of their account update when we're showing it on the screen. And I've actually been surprised, like only about a third of the clients want a paper copy. Some of them want us to email a copy, and probably half of them don't want a copy at all.
Well, even think of a company like Disney. I mean, there used to be people drawing all their cartoons, and they were great, right? We all loved the old Disney cartoons, and now the Disney movies use technology beyond what we ever even thought we could, that they could ever be comprehended. But has our experience increased? Yeah, watching the Disney movies now is phenomenal, right? So if you can embrace it in the right manner, it can really create a great business.
What are your thoughts? Like, we come to this conference once a year. We've been doing it now, I think this is 14 years. It's 2 days. It's you know, from 8:30 in the morning till 5. It's a long day. Are you still getting value out of it?
Absolutely. It's one of the conferences I find the most value in. We also do an Asante conference, which is coming up next week too. So these are the two main conferences we go to. And Rob, myself, we both attend other conferences over the years. But I always find this is my favorite one. They not only talk about the details behind the finance, they talk about behavior finance, they talk about how to improve the experience for your clients. We even had Brad Steinmans, the head of DFA, he even talked about happiness. And the sort of last piece we watched was what makes people happy and content with their life. And talked about meditation, things like that. You know, very unique, and I find it's helpful.
I'm always amazed they're able to find different things every year, and 7 out of 10 of them are just like bang on. I'm like, I can't stop taking notes and getting ideas for what we can bring back to what we're trying to deliver to the McClellan Financial Group. It's kind of fun. That's what I love doing.
The other good thing is Dimensional has done a great job at attracting fantastic advisors. There's 80 advisors here?
80. I think they have 240 in Canada that they call advisory teams. So, you know, we'd be one. And 80 of them are down. 80 advisors, probably only 50 teams.
Yeah. And to be honest, none of us are in competition with each other. You might think we are. You'd find it odd that everyone would be willing to share ideas. Everyone in this conference is out there to help each other. We're really united as a team. We go and help each other. It's great hearing new ideas, and they're all really strong financial advisors and really smart. And you just pick up idea after idea after idea. So I think it's the combination of what DFA provides for us as far as education and all the speeches, plus being able to sit down with really successful advisors and pick up all their best habits.
No, I would agree. I would agree. Well, I look forward to tomorrow. Hopefully it'll be as good a day.
Yep.
Hopefully the market cools off, but you never know. It's a Friday in October, so anything can happen.
Yep, we'll see.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Thanks.